Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you know, we've been talking about how with the Ryan selection as Romney's running mate, we now have a stark contrast between the two tickets, ideologically, even more than before. Well, my next guest says the two presidential candidates have always been very different linguistically. John McWhorter is a linguist and political commentator whose latest book, What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be, is now out in paperback. He's also with the Manhattan Institute. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me. I should say that actually the Manhattan Institute and I are no longer together, although with an amicable parting. Now I teach at Columbia University.
All right. I apologize.
No
problem. Here are a couple of sound bites of the two candidates discussing taxes that might illustrate your point about the Romney and Obama speaking styles, although these come from different circumstances. First, from the president's State of the Union address.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can call this class warfare all you want, but asking a billionaire to pay at least as much as his secretary in taxes? Most Americans would call that common sense.
And this from Governor Romney on CNBC explaining carried interest.
And you look to either the courts or to the IRS to look at the various structures of investment vehicles and say, gosh, is this a true capital investment with the risk of loss?
So where do you begin on the differences? Is it that the president is folksier?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, say, 70 years ago, 60 years ago, maybe even 50, Romney would have the vocal advantage because he sounds, quote unquote, like a president, or he sounds like the announcer in those old Disney cartoons where Goofy would be playing sports. He has this official pipe-smoking vocal character. But the fact is that in our moment, that particular sort of vanilla Bob male way of speaking has been devalued in a way. Nobody puts it in so many words, but the way that one communicates in a more immediate and more effective way with an audience is with a folksier style. And when it comes to Obama, it's not only folksy, there's also a black aspect to it. I think that the black flavoring in speech has a meaning today that it certainly didn't have to an earlier America. It's why, for example, so often nowadays, TV commercials will have announcers who are identifiably black for no particular reason. It's just for a bank or something like that, the kind of Morgan Freeman effect, but it doesn't have to be Morgan Freeman. And Obama has that such that a lot of the things that he says are so approachable and often so convincing in considerable part, not only because of their content, but because of the way that he can inflect them. I doubt if he does it consciously, but it really shows that we're a new America in terms of how we hear voices and how we hear language.
But Obama also takes heat for the way he slips into church cadences, especially when he's talking to black audiences. And I think you've said that slipping between speaking styles is something African Americans tend to do more than whites.
Oh, yeah, definitely. For people to think, and it was interesting to me to hear people saying this because I can see where they're coming from. I can put myself in their heads. To hear him as being fake in speaking different ways to different people is a rather American thing because we actually have a rather linguistically bland palate in terms of how language varies from place to place and person to person. Many people in many parts of the world would find it much more intuitive that somebody would speak one way to one group of people and another way to another group because there's just more variation between languages and between dialects. But particularly, most people who are black American have two repertoires. They don't necessarily think of it that way. Many will actually deny it when told, and so there are always these dust-ups that we hear about whether there's a such thing as Ebonics, whether black people speak standard English. It's a really interesting thing. There's a chapter that's partly about it in my book, What Language Is, where I try to get things straight. But, yeah, there is a repertoire. And Obama, and I haven't talked to the man, but I doubt if he thinks about it. When he speaks to the NAACP, he slides into certain cadences that are church and specifically aimed at a black audience. You could call some of it a little bit street. And it's there because that is a form of all things, articulateness with that audience.
And maybe it's political and it's put on for the moment, or maybe it's just the natural variation that you say exists within the community. I guess all communities probably do it to some degree. You know, if people live in a very, Jewish, Yiddish-speaking environment, and then they're speaking to other people outside the community, it's going to come out differently than when they're speaking to people inside, or take any ethnic group or linguistic group.
Without a doubt, that kind of variation is standard. In the United States, it's often rather narrow and subconscious, but go to almost anywhere in, say, India or in Africa or in China, you know, where there's the Mandarin that we might learn in a class, and then there are all sorts of different local Mandarins that are quite different. People slide in and out. That's natural. Anyone who doesn't, they are the ones who are rather unusual as human language repertoire goes.
To get back, and listeners, if you want to ask about or just note your own observations about the different speaking styles or linguistic differences between Romney and Obama, and I guess for that matter now we can say Biden and Ryan, you can call up for John McWhorter at 212-433-WNYC. This is not whether you like their policies. You get that, right? We're talking linguistics here and language and speaking styles. 212-433-WNYC for John McWhorter, author of What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be. To get back to the Romney clip we played a minute ago on carried interest, he used the word gosh. He talked about the structure of investment vehicles, and you look to them and you say, gosh, is this a true capital investment with the risk of loss? And you write about his use of gosh and golly and gee in a recent New Republic essay.
Yeah, those are polite euphemisms for referring directly to what many people call the man upstairs, and they go way, way back, 1500s, 1400s, and before, and it's all well to use them, but the fact of the matter is that Romney's versions of swearing or using interjections are also, in a way, those of another time because of an argument that I've made in a lot of places, which is that the whole notion of what profanity is has changed in modern American speech. And so the notion that you don't take the Lord's name in vain would seem to have just been killed by the fact that OMG, oh my God, is such a standard thing. To tell someone don't take the Lord's name in vain would seem beside the point, I think, for a great many speakers at this point. And I think that the four-letter words that I can't mention here, but we all know what they are no longer profane in the sense that an anthropologist would recognize they're a little bit salty. Our profanity, in the sense that an anthropologist would recognize as taboo, are things like the N-word or a word that begins with F that refers to people who are of same-sex preference. Those are the things that one really should not say.
But
really
is it still such a Romney 50s kind of father knows best throwback to use euphemisms for the F-word and the S-word? Because politicians nowhere are really using those, right?
Oh, no, and you can't use them. And so we're talking about an intermediate category. But in terms of as soon as the microphones are off, can we really say that, for example, the S word is profane, or is it just colorful? Or certainly the F word that only has four letters in it. For a great many speakers, and I wouldn't say that it's only inner city youth, it'd be hard to say that it's a curse word. You're not going to use it in the media that much. We wouldn't use it here. It'll certainly be in movies. I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing it more even on television very soon. It's not profanity in the sense that an outside analyst would recognize. Our profanity has become about race and sexuality, which it seems perfectly understandable.
All right, we've got about 5 minutes left. Let's get some of our many callers in here. Catherine in Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I just want to think back to the previous election. And if you recall, Obama was criticized for having a professorial type of speech, for being sounding too intellectual, against McCain, who was very plain spoken, and following Bush, who was very down home. I'll take your response.
Thank you. It's a good observation, and I guess it's very Obama that he gets criticized both for being professorial and for speaking, you know, too much church speak.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he has a very interesting kind of note that he sounds. You could call it professorial, But then all you have to do is go read a speech by Woodrow Wilson or go onto YouTube and listen to Adlai Stevenson if you want to hear how somebody can actually sound.
He lost his presidential elections partly because of that, didn't he?
Because he did not. He had a truly professorial way of speaking, whereas with Obama there's always a certain warmth underneath the professoriality, if you want to call it that, and that's because of what we could call his folksy and what I would say is also his black strain. And even if you don't think about it, it means that his professorial quality is one that is embraced by as many people as it's rejected.
Bill in Old Tappan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Great show this morning.
Thank
I really
you.
Enjoy it.
Thank you.
Just a comment, observation. I teach high school. High school students speak very differently with their classmates than they do with their teachers. And I just think that growing up a young African-American man in this country, Obama would have a certain way of speaking with his friends, and he would have a certain way of speaking with others. I think that's just part of what he who he is and who we are.
Thank you very much. Oscar in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Oscar.
Yes, I find the difference between Obama and Romney is that Romney is an affectation in his speech pattern because he's trying to distance himself from his Mexican heritage. If you study him, he looks like he's acting like father knows best, practically. And as you know, his father was Mexican, his grandfather was Mexican, and unfortunately, because of the immigration problem, Mexicans are looked down upon. Comment?
Well, as far as Romney's Mexican history, I think we can assume that in the cultural sense, in terms of the way he grew up and the people he grew up around, it would be a stretch to say that he's trying to get away from his Hispanic essence. I think he has a rather Caucasian American essence. More interesting is what the former caller said, which is showing, and it's something that I also mentioned in the book, which is that black Americans, especially black youth during that phase in their lives, actually have the biggest stretch of repertoire in American English of almost anybody in the country. It's actually something to be treasured and something interesting, as opposed to something to be looked down upon, which it often is.
Danny in Massapequa. Hi, Dan. You got something on speaking styles?
Hello?
Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, I think all politicians do this. I mean, Hillary Clinton was got in trouble for throwing in a couple of U-alls and stuff. And I agree with I work in a high school, and I don't understand half the words the teenagers are using, regardless of their color or race. And I think the last caller trying to get away, making a thing about Obama and his Mexicans. I mean, that's just hurtful.
That was Romney and his Mexicans. That was
Romney and his Mexicans. I mean, you look at Marco Rubio. He's a first-generation American, and you can't find any Hispanic dialect because he was raised and taught how to speak proper English. And the history of this country is that when you're an immigrant, you come, you learn English. And I think Obama speaks fine. I don't think people, you know, he's a politician. He's going to pander to the people he's speaking to regardless. And, you know, you look, I mean, I'm in law enforcement. If I'm sitting around with 20 guys having lunch, we have a certain vernacular. We have a certain way we speak. And that's not the way I speak in public. That's not the way I speak to my children. You have to speak to the person, to the audience.
Dan, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's funny. Obama does keep one aspect of his linguistic repertoire rather quiet, which is that the man speaks Indonesian. He must still be able to carry on a conversation, keeps it quiet because so many people would call him, quote-unquote, a Muslim if he called too much attention to it.
Right. I think implicit in what Dan was saying is it's not just that Obama comes from an African-American tradition, so he's more quick to change his speaking style depending on the audience. It's also that he's a politician and he's doing these things consciously. That's fair, right?
You know, Brian, I don't know, because the switching with the black speech repertoire is generally subconscious, and the man has a black wife and black in-laws. I don't know if you could say that he gets up there and thinks to himself, now I'm going to, you know, black it up, so to speak, because it's politically the thing to do. He could really be doing it without thinking at all, although, very quickly, there is something about him, which is that his black identity is constructed. And I don't mean to call him a phony, but you don't develop much of a black American identity in Hawaii and Indonesia. It's something that he chose. So maybe there's an aspect of it that's more conscious for him than it would be for people who, from the get-go, were in a black American context. But I don't know.
All right. We've got 30 seconds, not as much time as I wanted to leave for this, but Merriam-Webster just announced the top 25 words and definitions added to the latest edition of the dictionary, including aha moment, brain cramp, bucket list, cloud computing, craft beer, earworm, which means a song or melody that keeps repeating in your mind, energy drink, e-reader, and F-bomb. You want to comment on any of those in 10 seconds?
Well, it's always good to hear that there's more flexibility allowed, but what always surprises me is how long a lot of those words have been around. But dictionaries are becoming freer, too. It's been happening, especially since the early 60s, and I think they should, because language is more interesting than many dictionaries make it seem.
John McWhorter, thank you so much.